lost to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
Good evening and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil, episode number 183, the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters all about the craft of songwriting. They can be brand new songwriters, established professionals, or anything in between. Together, the idea is that we share all the stuff we figured out along the way and we share that information with each other so that at the end of the show, we all learn four new things.
Four
new things. Maybe
pressure's on.
Maybe even five new things about how to write better songs.
All right.
Don't forget, you can find us here every Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on CJRU 1280 a.m. in Toronto. Or you can listen to the live stream just by going to songtalk.ca, and we have a fancy new player there that will pop up. So just click on that, and you can listen to it if you can't get to the radio. Tonight, I will be your host. My name is Phil Emery, and joining me tonight, as always, are the very dedicated members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team. Across the way, Mr. Bruce Herrett.
Good evening, sir.
The lovely, talented Neil Modi.
Why, thank you, Phil. Reporting for duty.
And the equally lovely and talented Vanessa Veerland, who is handling the social media onslaught. Yay! Don't forget, during the show, please join in the conversation and send your comments and questions to Song Talk Radio on Twitter, and we will share them with the audience in real time. And you can also send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. That'll do the same thing. Please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to find out how you can be a guest on this very show. And speaking of guests...
Good segue.
Thank you. Our guest is... Amir Brandon. He has been writing songs and performing music for all his life. He's inspired by hit songs, and his goal is to write music that can reach people and connect with people all around the world. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Hi. Happy to be here.
So now, what is your story? How long have you been doing the songwriting thing?
I've been taking this pretty seriously for about 7 or 8 years.
All right. Now, before that... Because I mean, you're quite accomplished as a piano player and a singer. So, were you working playing a lot of covers before that, or?
Ever since I was like 2 years old, I loved to sing. And actually, back then, I didn't really like playing piano so much because I was learning it more on the technical side. And so, as I kept singing, I eventually realized that, like, I need to accompany myself. So I started practicing piano. But yeah, it was in high school where it started getting more serious for me because I had to start thinking about what I wanted to do with my life. And so that's when I made the firm decision that this is what I want to do. But I've always loved to sing and play.
So when you were younger, you actually studied, like, conservatory piano? Or
no, actually. It was I had some piano lessons, but a lot of it was just by ear.
So you're kind of self-taught?
Yeah. I mean, I learned some of the theory from piano lessons, but then I kind of strayed away from that, and I learned more of it by ear, just like...
You played chords.
How to play chords and how harmony works.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's...
YouTube? Is there anything on YouTube to teach people how to play the piano?
Oh, yeah. There's lots of stuff on YouTube.
Mm.
But of course, back then there wasn't. Was there YouTube when you started, or...?
When I started taking it seriously, as I was saying, like that was 2009. That's when YouTube was starting to pick up.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I actually, learned a lot from like voice lesson videos on YouTube back then.
Really?
And I developed a pretty good foundation in singing just from YouTube.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Huh.
And so were you were singing and playing piano before you ever started writing, obviously, because you were always singing. Right?
Yeah.
When did the actual writing of songs start for you? When did that kick in?
I think I wrote my first song when I was like 12 or something, and it wasn't very good, obviously. But
Never mind. We had a 13-year-old in here who had some good tunes, so it depends. Yeah.
Yeah, it's something that you don't really even keep track of. It just kind of happens. Like I'm sure I just must have written a lot of bad songs over the years, and then they just got better.
When did you start performing something that you had written that you thought was worth sharing?
I started performing when I moved to Toronto. I was born in Ottawa, and I moved to Toronto 8 years ago. And from then I started, it started with like stuff in high school. Like I was part of different kind of clubs and like show choirs and stuff. And we performed together from there. And then after I graduated, I started coming downtown more and checking out open mics.
Did you, so did you move to Toronto for your music career?
No, I actually moved with my family because my sister was married and she had kids here and she lived here first.
So
my mom dragged us all over there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's the reason why I'm here, but I'm glad I'm here.
Now, do you do any co-writing or is most of your stuff sort of on your own? Or
I'm starting to do more co-writing now for a few different reasons, I guess. Like, when I started writing, I've always felt very, like, attached to what I write and, like, I don't want anybody to touch it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Once you get used to co-writing, and it's actually really hard because you have to, like, be very open to other people's opinions if they don't like something and consider their suggestions.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it a lot more now with some different people, and it's going pretty well, and I'm writing stuff that I haven't written before.
That's great. You know, I think when you start writing, and I remember this too, and I think we all went through that. You write a song and you think it's perfect that you've gone through every possibility.
Mm-hmm. Don't touch it.
And you don't want to touch it. But after a while, like, you realize you're going to write hundreds of songs in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you can actually try a variation on a song and it may work and it may not. And sometimes you don't know that until actually you've done the change and you've played it a bunch of times and you go, oh, okay, it actually kind of works.
There's, I guess you could call it a club. You guys probably know about it, called Songwriters Association of Canada.
SAC, yes.
Yes. And they sometimes have, like, these meetups in the city where they'll bring some people in the industry over and they'll play one of your songs, and those people, like the panelists, will give you their opinions about the song. Mm. And so I did that with some of my songs, and I was thinking, like, okay, this is amazing. They're going to love it. Like, I'm going to get a record deal today. Like, just all these things go through your head. And then they gave me criticism, and I was, like, so surprised. But it just goes to show that, like,
you know, I have to... Was it helpful, though?
Was the criticism helpful?
Yeah, it was.
Helpful?
It was, and I actually found some people... I met some people there that I've been doing co-writes with.
I know the thing you're talking about, and that's a very specific thing, because they actually have people who are in the industry, like the real record... label people, and they can be pretty darn harsh. I mean, they're not mean, but they're very blunt, and they say, look, this will never get on the radio.
Yeah, that's really their primary concern is will this be
commercial? If they're going to, I mean, would someone be willing to sink their own money into this project is their question.
Yeah.
And the thing which is different with our songwriters meetup, which I think is great,
and the show,
is we can actually kind of be helpful. But it's actually more about helping people sort of move forward with their artistic growth as opposed to, oh, well, you know, you'll never, you know, that's never pop, you'll never work, because that's not what it's about.
Right.
I mean, like, I think there's a role for each one thing.
Yeah,
I mean, if I
could share, I've just been at Song Studio this week, and that's a Toronto-based summer music workshop that Blair Packham and Rick Emmett started 12, 13 years ago. And it's a full week, and we had a writer from Los Angeles who had 3 multi-platinum album hits. We had Steve Page from the Bare Naked Ladies there. We had... who else was there? It was someone from Nashville. It was a publisher from Nashville. We had the vice president of Warner Music Canada who gave feedback. They all gave feedback on songs. And they would usually preface it by saying, I'm going to give this feedback based on whether this would be a pop song on the radio. So just understand that.
Yeah.
And some people in the workshop did not want to write pop songs for the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So she was kind of saying, this is Shelley, she was saying, why are you here? Like, why are you in this workshop then, right?
Because
you know what I am, you know what I do, and you know what I know. So I think for all you songwriters out there, get feedback from the people in the industry that you're actually aspiring to. And I imagine, Amir, you're aspiring to pop singles, right?
Yes.
Okay, definitely. So more of that is great. And we also give an assignment at the beginning of the week to do a co-write. So there are about 15 co-writes ended up being performed on the last night of the workshop, and they were good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my co-write was better than I would have written alone, which, you know,
that's kind of the whole point. Is that what you're finding,
that you put your own ideas with someone else and you get, well, you said it wouldn't be something you would ever write.
Because you're getting, like, a second opinion. Like we were saying before, you might write something and think it's amazing, but that person you're co-writing with could completely tear it apart.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's
mm-hmm.
happened where I've written something and I'm so proud of it, and then I go show it to somebody for their opinion, and they're like, you know what, actually, like, this chorus isn't that good. And I'm like, what? I thought the chorus was the best part.
So you rewrite it.
Yeah, so right then you here? Rewrite it and you get a second opinion on it. And yeah, when I'm writing, I try and like listen from the ears of other people as well, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
like,
no,
I try and imagine
important.
What other people are going to think of it. And I actually send it to people to get their opinions. And I don't know, I think that that really helps.
So when you're co-writing, Amir, do you co-write with other people who are fully songwriter that you are?
Like further up the food chain?
No, not necessarily further up. Let me put it a different way. Usually when I collaborate with somebody, I'm collaborating with somebody who's got the strengths in the areas that I don't. I don't have a very strong singing voice. I don't write melodies all that well or lyrics all that well necessarily. So I tend to write the music part and let someone else do the lyric and melody. Because they're good at that, and I'm good at this. And then that way, we're not stepping over each other's toes too much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know if I've ever thought about that way. I think so far, I've just been writing with people that, like, I like the stuff that they've already written.
Yeah, that
but
too.
But subconsciously, maybe, because I've worked with some people who are really good with lyrics, and I think that I'm pretty good with melody. And I'm good with, like, when I'm writing something, usually I create a melody and I just like sing random words on top of it that I think flow well.
Right.
So in that sense, I'm good with lyrics, but in the sense of making the lyrics
meaningful
and come together. I've worked with some people who are really good with that. So maybe.
Co-writing is also, it is a lot like dating, is that because it's a chemistry thing, you know, it's, you meet, see people and you'll sit down with someone and you might come up with something which is, you know, kind of okay, but not great. You'll meet another person, and it's like magic, and you just like you write four songs at once.
It's also a level of trust as well. Like, do you trust the person you're working with to really express yourself deeply or fully or
That was one of Shelley's. Shelley Piken was on will be on our show coming up August 29th, I think it is. Shelley Piken has been, she wrote the book, song Bitch, which is the big hit, and recorded by Miranda Brooks,
Meredith Brooks,
yeah. Anyway, what she said is she calls it song sex. And she says, you can't just walk in a room and sit down and start writing. How about lunch first, she says, you know, like, let's have a coffee. Because often, she says, if you're meeting a co-write, and you'll go out for a walk or something and just talk about life, and then by the time you get back to the room to do the writing, somebody has mentioned, you know, I'm really interested in what you said about your mother there or your sister. How about that? Oh, is that an idea? Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about your co-write process. When you first meet somebody, how does that go?
Yeah, I think we just like we sit down together and we talk and we learn about each other. And I guess part of doing that is through writing. But that's a really good idea. I should start doing
go
that.
Go for
more.
A walk.
No, because it's more than just like a business transaction or whatever. Because like you're sharing your life with this person and like you're writing about your life.
And that's really valuable if you guys are starting from scratch. But a lot of the time collaborations work where someone's come to the table with, you know, most of a song, or they just need the bridge, or maybe they need to finesse some of the melody or some of the lyrics, and the other person sort of gives their feedback and you work together on finishing it. And then vice versa. Like, you can always, the other writer can always bring something to the table.
But let's hear a song.
Let's hear a song. So what's the, now the first song we're going to hear is, what is it called?
Diamonds Rain.
And can you tell us about the writing process of this?
With this song, this is an interesting one because I started writing this song by writing a different song. It started as something completely different. And I was, like we were saying before, I was actually really proud of it and I thought it was going to be amazing. And then I showed it to some people and they weren't so crazy about it. And then I kind of fell out of love with it. But I took the chord progression of that song and I wrote another song. And then I still wasn't happy with that one. So I took the chord progression and a piece of the melody of that song.
Yeah.
And I wrote something else. And it just kept going until finally I had this one.
There's no reason why you can't steal from yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
you know?
I've done that all the time.
Yeah, same here. I do it all the time.
It's legal.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's take a listen.
Pretty boys, pretty girls. Picture perfect dreams and so much to prove. But then in us, we ain't like the others. Living for tonight with nothing to lose. Now we're driving on this open road. God knows where we're
right.
Great.
That was Diamonds by Amir Brandon on Science Talk Radio, Bruce Neal and Phil.
Diamonds Rain. Yeah.
Diamonds Rain on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto.
Great song.
Greatest song. I love that line.
I want to dance to it.
When Diamonds Rain on the Avenue, it's such an original take. And I think that's always the hardest thing is to, with any kind of poetry, is to say something that hasn't been said before.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting line that just jumped out at me. The first time I heard it, mm-hmm. I went, wow, that's an interesting, something I haven't heard before. Like, you hear lots of things like, I want to be with you, I love you, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That was something that was kind of really original, and I thought it was kind of atmospheric.
Thanks.
Which is really, really nice. And I love the, in a perfect sky, shooting stars are passing by. I love that kind of, that rhythm and that internal rhyme. And a really interesting structure, too. Certainly not just like a verse, chorus, first chorus, middle eight, bridge, end thing. It's lots of different levels to it and breakdown. It's Now, you've obviously worked with a producer on this.
Yes.
Did the producer work with you on structure, or was this kind of your structure that you dealt with?
Define structure.
Well, you know, when things broke down and when the choruses.
Verse, chorus, pre-chorus, chorus, repeat.
What I did was I wrote the song on the piano, and I took it to my producer. His name is Thomas McKay. And together we formed, like, the arrangement and all the different sounds. And so, I don't know, I guess it was a little bit of a team effort.
But did he add a chorus or extend a chorus or say, no, the bridge should go, there should be a bridge or...
Well, I'm really curious about how, okay, like, in, after the first chorus you did, or after the second verse, rather, you cut the pre-chorus in half. Was that something you did originally, or was that something
that was good point.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. That was cool.
I can't remember whose idea that was, but honestly, like, stuff like that in the studio, it just happens.
It just happens
naturally and spontaneously, yeah.
Well, sometimes the nice thing about working with modern technology is you can sit there and feel and go, wow, you know, it kind of dies there, you know, we need to do something there, or, you know.
There, it felt like after the second verse, it felt like the pre-chorus needed to be shorter. And, like, we wanted to just go right to the payoff.
Well, you want to get back to the chorus. Yeah. The source is chorus is so catchy.
Because that's the point of pop songs. You just want to find a way to get to the chorus, pretty much.
Yeah. Very cool.
I like the two broke lovers, too. Like, this whole thing seems to be, like, pretty boys and pretty girls. All this flash, it seems like. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a song you wrote in L.A. for some reason, in Hollywood, maybe in West Hollywood. No, but just that idea of there's all these flashy people.
Yeah.
We're not that. We got our own diamonds, though, and they're in the sky. Right? It's a beautiful image, right? You've got your diamonds on your fingers or whatever, but we have it in the sky, and we're broke, but we're in, at least we're in love. And then you go to nature, the waves in the ocean. Now, I'm part of the grammar police here at Song Talk Radio. So just two little things that I think might be wrong, but it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Those things that don't matter. Like, nothing in the world can stop you and I. I think it's you and me, because it would be nothing in the world can stop me, and nothing in the world can stop you.
You know what? I've heard that before.
But it doesn't matter, because it rhymes with tonight and no one
verse. Yeah. Nothing in the world can stop you and I.
I forgot to mention that you can actually get the lyrics for this song off the show notes or on songtalk.ca if you're listening to it. So you can download and listen.
The lyrics are on the website right now to look at. So I don't know for sure, because I'm not a grammarian. But I'm not an official. I was a grammarian, but the dues were too high. So I left. But anyway, that's a small point, because I don't know actually what it is, because I know if I said nothing in the world can stop me, and nothing in the world can stop you, so you and me together,
I think the other issue here, too, is that, like...
Nothing in the world can stop you and I?
You and I.
That's correct.
I don't know but it doesn't matter if it's correct or not. The meaning is clear.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't obscure the meaning.
That's interesting, though.
I think that's...
Look it up, folks at home, if you want.
I think when it comes with grammar, it's whether or not it's an actual interest... your intention is clear.
Confuses somebody. And, of course, sometimes you want to have – sometimes in a song you want to have bad grammar. Like you say, I ain't gonna stay with you no longer, baby.
Yeah.
And you do it on purpose, right? That's fine.
Just for the sake of flow.
And the other thing is, this is just for the kids at home, not for you, Amir, necessarily. But on the very last no matter, so it's in your chorus, right? So you say no matter – No matter what's right, and the word is no matter. But in the chorus, because of the rhythm, he sings no matter what happens, babe? No matter. So that's called the accent on the wrong syllable, right? Mm-hmm. And well, the, so it is, takes it out of speaking. But as we said many times on the show,
can be catchy.
It can be very catchy because people go, oh, that's different.
Yeah,
I'm not used to hearing that word sound that way, and that's cool.
And the other thing is when you hear the entire phrase, you then process what it means. If you're actually looking for the meaning in the words, you're not going to be confused necessarily by that slight.
And also context.
Change,
I mean, this is kind of
that's
a dance beat. You know, it's got a very intense rhythm. So people are going to be hitting that rhythm fairly hard.
But
so you're going to be doing the thing.
I don't know. For our listeners at home, I would say just my vote is, as much as possible, make the line scan they would if you were saying it to somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you read your lyric, no matter what happens, babe, I just want to be with you. And then sing that, if you can, with that scan. And if it's not working, you may have to change the scan of the lyric.
Let's actually go back to Amir on this. You wrote melody first? You say you had an original song and you appropriated the chord progression and part of the melody?
Yeah, so with this song, the chord progression is what started. And then I had the melody with different lyrics.
Different lyrics.
Think they were just like nonsense back then.
But you had da 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 da.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da.
Actually, the chorus was the last thing that I came up with. It started with the verse.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I came up with, for this song, I had so much trouble getting a chorus. And so I wrote a bunch of different choruses for this song until finally I just out of nowhere came up with the melody for this one. And I think that I must have started with some kind of semblance of the words, like, no matter, na, 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 I just want to, na, na, na. And then you just take pieces of that.
Or you use na na na. Do you just do it like la la la?
I use na na na. Sometimes I use actual just random words that don't make sense.
Yeah.
And I know
and
that there's,
there's
a lot of like top liners and songwriters that write like that, where they have a melody and they just improvise and sing random words to that melody. And certain words that they're singing just sound good. They flow well. And then they base the song off of that instead of having an idea of what the song is about and then writing the song about that. So I don't have a particular process. Like I write in every way, but this song happens to be that.
I'm really impressed by the fact that you had choruses that you knew were not good enough.
Yeah.
And that's a really mature songwriting thing to do is to go, you know, this is not, it's not there yet. And you got to keep on working at it, and sometimes you have to work for it for a year. Yeah,
well,
you know, because I think other people have said, "Oh, well, it's fine the way it is."
But yeah, and this chorus is actually really interesting because it's quite long. It is actually quite long, but the great thing about it is that you almost break it in the middle with that different melody on the fifth line, "Diamonds Rain When You Are With Me." Like, you really change the rhythm, you change the melody, everything about it almost sounds like the chorus is coming to an end, but then you reprise the beginning of the chorus again.
Yeah,
I'm actually quite passionate
off,
about,
which is pretty cool.
I'm quite passionate about this chorus for a few reasons, and that's one of them. Like, you really don't know, like, all of the different things that come into play when you're writing something. Like, with this one, the chorus sounds like it's, like, major, like, with the chord progressions. Like, the chords sound very major, and it sounds leaning towards
open.
The major key.
Yeah.
And then once it goes to that part that you're talking about, oh, diamonds rain when, it goes to the relative minor.
It goes to the minor,
and so it's just another little...
It's
spice
tasty.
Of something that's
really
meant to surprise
tasty.
You.
Yeah, I noticed that. I went, ooh, that's nice.
It's in, what key is it in? I think it's in the key of D, I think.
So what's a relative minor to D, boys?
B minor.
Mm.
D is B minor?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're talking about the circle of fifths, which is also available on our website.
We've been talking a lot about going to the minor in the last few weeks with the various songwriters we've had on here. And it's still kind of surprising to the ear and really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people don't do it much. And it's a very handy thing, especially with the way you handled it, where it's within, like, it's not sort of like going to relative minor for a bridge or for a section. You actually just kind of went
in the middle
of
the chorus.
The middle of the chorus, which made it so tasty, you know?
Yeah. Mm.
So
what about the verses are relatively major, or are they in the minor?
The verses... It's hard to say because, like, the chords... it's a bit of both because there's some major chords and some minor chords, so I think of it in terms of the melody. I would say it's minor because the na, it sounds like that note is the home note, and that is the root of the minor key.
Right. That is so cool. But speaking of things that are cool, Neil's got something cool to tell us.
Oh,
for those of you just joining us, You're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and streamed on songtalk.ca. Tonight, our guest is Amir Brandon. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so please tweet us in your thoughts at Song Talk Radio on Twitter or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on Song Talk Radio on our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, I know you're all wondering, on August the 8th, we have country rock folk-inspired songwriter Jeff Leeson. On August 15th, we have alternative folk rock songstress Cynthia Baba. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup on Wednesday, August the 16th, 7 to 10 p.m. That's at the Transat Club. That's in the Annex area of Toronto. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. And the turnout last time was pretty good, eh, Phil?
It was very full. And the sign-up sheet was basically filled well before the
show.
Yeah,
so it starts at 7, but get there early because the sign-up sheet does fill up.
Yeah, 20 to 7 would be good.
Yeah, I would say
6:30 maybe.
6:30-ish.
Yeah, stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the details. And we love getting emails from our listeners.
I do. You know, that makes me happy.
We've got an email here from a young man named Mike Norris. Actually, I don't know how young he is, but anyway. A fine chap.
A fine young man.
A fine chap named Mike Norris. It sounds like he's from England. No, he's Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay. Same thing.
All right. And he was talking about the show we did last week on nonverbal hooks.
Yes.
And he called them wordless hooks, which is, I guess, another way of looking at it.
Probably a better way of actually
looking at it. And his comment says, this started at least as far back as the Renaissance. There are plenty of madrigals with chorus full of fa-la-la. Think of Deck the Halls.
I don't remember us mentioning Deck the Halls.
We did mention Deck the Halls.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, Bruce did.
I even sang it.
A well-known Christmas carol from the 16th century. At the opposite end of the timeline, as in contemporary, I think of La La La, which is a song by Sam Smith.
Currently. Oh, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there are many out there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's something that when you start listening for it, you actually do hear it a lot.
Well, and the millennial whoop, we call it. In millennial songwriting, there's often a what does he call it? Wordless.
Yeah. Wordless. Nonverbal, whatever.
Wordless.
Yeah.
Hooks.
Although in my mind that's a very different thing.
Yeah, I suppose it can be. But it was an interesting show because a lot of songs became hits without the part that was.
Well, especially even this one he's referring
to. Not really words.
Even this one he's referring to by Sam Smith. I don't know the song, but it's titled La La La. I'm assuming that's the chorus.
You sing a few bars?
How does it go? Covering my ears like a kid. When your words mean nothing, I go la la la.
He sings good, doesn't he?
Yeah. You just want to hear him sing live.
Exactly.
You know, I found something out that I was really, really amazed. And, you know, I think of Neil Young as being kind of a country rocker guy, you know, 16 in Ohio. You know, he wrote A Lot of Love. It's going to be it's going to take a lot of love to change the way things are.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's a really jazzy, complicated song. And I'm just going, wow, that's Neil Young?
Because it was made
popular by some other people. But
Are you sure it wasn't a collaboration with somebody?
No, it was him.
It was all
Who
him.
Was
it
that? Was him. It wasn't Linda Ronstadt, was it? It's
no.
It's a country performer.
It's such a brilliant song.
Oh, Neil Young wrote it, but someone else made it famous.
Linda
Ronstadt.
No, probably not.
I'm sure she covered it.
It's going to take a lot of love.
It's a really good one because it's very jazzy. If you listen to it, it's very jazzy. And
if you look in my direction.
Yeah, every now and then you find out it's like these songwriters going, wow, he's really talented. I mean, look at his body of work.
Speaking of really talented.
Yes.
So you started putting stuff on YouTube when? Because you took that tack of doing covers on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
You did a brilliant one of George Michael's.
Careless Whisper.
Careless Whisper.
Careless Whisper. That's the first thing
Guilty
I heard.
Guilty Feet Ain't Got No Rhythm.
Yeah, and you got a lot of feedback on that one as being really, really well done. Did you intentionally do covers on YouTube to get known and then start introducing your own tunes after, or did you
That was the strategy. The strategy. I started in 2009, I think. That's when it, like, a lot of people started doing it. But I don't know. Like, with some of the stuff that I've been doing lately, I've actually been, like, creating my own musical arrangements and changing it up. And I actually find that I really enjoy doing covers like that. because
so are the covers, you have to actually learn a lot by doing that, don't you?
Yeah.
For sure.
And you make it your own. Are your covers, you do all the recording of it yourself, the piano and everything?
Most of them. Some of them, like, there's some that have guitar in them, and I don't play guitar, so I would just get them from somebody else.
But you produce them.
But yes.
So they're well produced.
Yeah, I arrange all of the vocals, and for most of them, I do produce the musical arrangements as well.
Because you've got one that you're appearing as a choir behind yourself. Which one's that?
It's like
three
actually.
Or four part. Yeah.
I think I did Stay With Me like that.
Yeah,
I really like to play with harmonies in my covers.
Mm-hmm. Right, so you've got like a background choir. Is that Sam Smith, Stay With Me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a listen to that, folks.
That's we'll definitely link to that on the show notes.
What's your YouTube channel called?
If you just look me up, Amir Brandon, or you could do youtube.com/AmirBrandon and you'll find me.
All right, well, send us the link to that.
Yep.
Yeah, cool. That's I've heard a lot of people actually almost exclusively do covers on these YouTubes. And I know some of them are good songwriters, but they do that because it's a good way of getting people and rearranging the songs.
Yeah.
I always felt that if you're going to do a cover, if you can't do it like significantly better in that style, you should rearrange it and make it something different and something new, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've always held the opinion you should make it your own anyway, because what's the point in doing it the way the original artist did it? You may as well just listen to the original artist.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, like, well,
my favorite cover,
twist on it, right?
My favorite cover of all time is Devo's cover of Satisfaction.
Oh, yeah?
Where
really?
Just, like, just pulled it apart and turned it upside down, and, you know, it's barely recognizable. And I hate the song Satisfaction.
Yeah.
It's one of the worst wrong songs, stolen songs. Yeah.
Do you have to get permissions to do covers on YouTube, or is it blanket license?
No, but it's kind of a gray area because, like, usually it's fine, but what happens is you can monetize your covers, like you can monetize anything.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is YouTube just senses somehow that it's a cover of the song, maybe from the title that you write in, and they say that you're splitting the monetization royalties with the owners or with the labels or whatever. But on the off occasion, sometimes YouTube will actually take the video down.
Yeah.
And that's actually happened with some of the stuff that I did. But
well,
somehow,
it really depends on the ownership and who owns it and how upset
and
they
it's
are about
it's
it.
Really annoying because sometimes it's really just a robot that just senses it and it takes it down because there's so many other people that did the exact same thing that I did and they didn't get taken down.
Are you able to contact them and try to sort of
You can file a dispute and I've tried it and sometimes they turn it down, but it's weird because with the ones that they turned down where I filed the dispute, a few months later, it just became public again, and people started watching it again. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, that's
strange things.
Let's talk about the original writing. So where did Waiting for Summer come from?
Waiting for Summer, I started writing that the moment I woke up one day.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually never happened. So that's one of the interesting stories that I have. I remember just waking up, and like I felt kind of tired, and for some reason, this thing just came into my head, waiting for summer. And I just took my phone and I recorded a little voice memo. And that's how that started. But the song is about counting down the days until you see somebody again.
Do you remember the writing? Like, how long did it take you to write the stuff? Was this something that took a long time to work at, or was it fairly fast?
This one, I think I wrote the lyrics pretty quickly. And then I took it to a friend of mine who I co-wrote it with. And he tore it apart, obviously. And he added some really cool chords that completely put a new spin on the song.
Oh,
like,
really?
In the chorus, there's this seventh chord that he put in there that, like, it just gives it a whole nother vibe.
Mm. Do you want to do a shout-out to your co-write?
Yeah, his name is Jeff Willingham.
Jeff Willingham?
He's awesome.
Oh. Okay, great.
That's great. Okay, well, we'll definitely let's take a listen, and we'll listen for that seventh chord.
Yes.
In the chorus.
Spot the seventh.
The summer wind is gone again, and autumn leaves drift into my broken dreams, baby. Stand still when I'm alone. The stars align and worlds collide, but none of that means a thing when you're not around. So I look out and count the days till seasons change. Oh, I guess that's how it goes.
crystal nights and December lights. Take me back to the year when you
I was Waiting for Summer by Amy Brandon on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM.
I just want to point out something right off the top. The intro to that song, it was like the perfect length, right? And
yes.
A lot of songwriters, mm-hmm. especially when they're performing live, they repeat that intro chord pattern like for eight bars.
Oh, no way.
And he's like, get right to the melody.
Oh, for
yeah.
sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I'm very strict about like making things concise and getting mm-hmm. to the next section quickly.
Yeah.
The structure worked really well. You got a verse, pre-chorus, chorus, and then you repeat that. Mm-hmm. And then to a surprise bridge. Mm-hmm. Bridges are one of my favorite parts. And what you did really interestingly on the bridge is you did a little bit of a different kind of vocalizing on that. So it was a little more free. It was a few little tricks and things that happened to make the bridge stand out, mm-hmm. right, and move us back
What was the chord change in the bridge? It seemed like a bit of a harmonic shift there.
I went to the five. That's the first
really?
Chord.
Just from the major one to the major five?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, what happens is at the end of the chorus, I play a minor version of the four. So we're in the key of G. Mm-hmm. So instead of a C major, which is the four, I play C minor. And usually that C minor, like one of the notes in that chord lends to the harmonic minor of the scale. Like usually you just have relative minor, but it's harmonic. And that makes you want to go to the home chord. It makes it more tense. So you want to go to that chord more. Mm-hmm. And after that, instead of going to the one, I go to the five for the bridge.
Oh, nice.
In the same key, though. You didn't change
it. So you're going to D major then?
Like you're in G, the D major chord,
you're going to
yes.
D major. You're going to C minor to D major.
Oh, I was, now I was listening for that seventh chord, but I couldn't...
Oh, it's there in the...
The tail end of the chord. Like
first line?
It's the second chord of the
when you sing Come Around. Right?
No, Summer.
No,
it's right on Summer.
It's on Summer?
So, yeah, it's G.
Waiting for Summer.
B7.
It's right there.
Oh, that one, okay. Right.
It's the seventh, right off the top.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Right, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's yeah.
And
it's
then
an
you walk down on the line.
Yeah.
You two come around. Mm-hmm. And that's, what is that? Is that a C, a G again, or is it a walk down?
What am I doing? I'm going from G, B7, E minor, DC. Yeah, E minor, DC. Yeah, it's just going down.
Okay. It's a nice chromatic walk. It's the way you say waiting for summer. Like there's a lot of different ways you could say that. You go waiting for summer, waiting for summer. You're waiting for summer.
Yeah.
Which at first makes threw me off. And I actually have to admit, I didn't like it the first time I was walking around here. Yeah. Oh, that's kind of weird. But I have to admit, it's really grown on me.
It does grow on you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's
because
really
the first time it is a little bit like... There's something weird about it.
Because it almost sounds like at first, because I hadn't met you before. So I actually thought maybe you were Indian and you were sort of singing with waiting for a summer. You know, sometimes like people who speak English as a second language, they'll sort of hit words sort of strange like that. Mm-hmm. But it actually works really well. And and just the way you hit waiting for you to come around is so tasty. That mm-hmm. is so great. There's times it really reminded me of a Queen.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The, with the...
Well, all right with you?
Yeah.
I don't mind, thanks.
Well, I mean, with the... especially with the backing vocals, because your backing vocals are so crisp. I mean, you're like Eddie Murphy. They used to say when Eddie Murphy used to... Eddie Murphy couldn't actually double his vocals. Yeah. Because when he would do it, it was so perfect, it would start to phase.
My girl wants to party all in the night.
Yeah. Are you talking about...
The donkey from Shrek.
Eddie Murphy had a music career, of course.
No, Eddie started...
You're not talking about Eddie Murphy at
no,
all.
No, I'm talking about...
You're talking about Freddie Mercury.
Oh my God! Oh. I was wondering, but I was following.
I was following along
with you, but
you're
I wasn't
polite.
Sure.
I was who the hell is Eddie Mercury? Well, he did
Freddie
have
Mercury.
Freddie Mercury does what? What were you saying? No. What is the point?
Oh well, he's just
a lot of harmonies.
He does a lot of his, like he did all his own harmonies,
mm-hmm. right.
And they were always pitch perfect because he was pitch perfect. In fact, he was so perfect that he couldn't double. Sometimes in the studio, they'll double your line. It makes it a bit thicker because there's a bit of difference.
Yeah, I know doubling.
But other people might not.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, are there listeners?
I think so.
Hello.
But
sorry.
When he would do it, it was so exact, it would actually start to phase.
Right.
Because it wasn't different.
Oh, I got it now.
So it just sounded weird.
Oh, my God.
That's how good he was.
So sorry, listeners. Doubling what you do in pop songs is you double the voice and you get it fairly close.
Yeah.
Very close, and you'll listen to early Beatles or Beach Boys, and there's early pop. There's a lot of doubling, and there still is.
Dubbing goes on all the time.
Yeah, but it's more electronic now, and it's a little more. Yeah. It feels like they did tweaked something rather than did it freelance.
You sing it twice exactly, quote unquote exactly, but there's always minor variances.
Yeah, you try to close, and you get a little bit. It gives it a bit of thickness.
Back in the old days, when they didn't have any way to adjust the voices, and there was no computers going on, right? You'd notice some of them were quite off, but it made it really interesting, and you went. Oh, he's doubling his voice. Okay, it's Paul twice, and it was John Lennon twice, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing. Right. I was listening to some old 70s stuff because that's sort of when I grew up. And, the songs you listen to when you're really young, because I always listen to the radio. And I was listening to Miracles by Jefferson Starship, If Only You Could Believe in Miracles. Well, I remember as a kid you're thinking it was just such the coolest song. But now you're listening to it and the vocals are like really off.
Yeah.
You're just kind of going. But at the time you didn't sound it. Like it still sounds good, but you notice.
Because it was all but didn't they have meters and stuff to check that, the tuning? Not at the recording studio?
No,
I guess not.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I grew up in more of like the electronic world of music where they actually like touch a lot of the vocals and stuff. And when I originally, a long time ago, listened back to Joni Mitchell and the Beatles and stuff, and you hear all the imperfections, it kind of threw me off. And I was like, whoa, like, why does it sound like this? But it's because it was real and it was raw.
Yeah.
The Beach Boys had a lot of really bad harmonies to my ear. Even in the day, it didn't sound right. It was close enough. For the average listener who's not used to listening to computerized vocals with vocal corrections and everything. Did you double your voice on this for the lead?
For the lead, I don't think there was any doubling in this one.
No.
Maybe in the chorus.
So why would you choose to double?
Just make it sound fuller.
Very often they'll do it in a chorus because it adds a bit of life to it.
Okay.
It adds some sort of, it's quality that's you can't really get anywhere else. Even electronically, it's very tough to achieve. There's a certain kind of magic that happens. It kind of jumps up the energy of a vocal.
I want to talk a bit about the emotion in the song. We've been talking a lot about you obviously have a really good grasp of harmonics and chord progressions
and melody.
The science of it and melody and everything. I want to talk about the feeling for a minute because I like the feeling. This comes in as a long tradition of songs like See You in September, which was a big hit when I was in middle school. And we got to say goodbye for the summer. I'll see you in September. So it's all that longing, longing to be with someone and tying it to a season. That hopefully you'll be back. And often it was, if you're going away for a summer job when you're in high school, you hope your girlfriend, boyfriend, whoever will be there when you get back in September, right? Yeah. So that will see you in September. And I really like this that it's you start the song with the autumn beginning, mm-hmm. and you've got to wait a whole year because now we have to go through the whole Crystal Nights of December. We're still waiting, you know, and you're waiting a long time for summer. So that excitement that we all have when spring comes, especially in northern climes, is doubled up emotionally now, right? Mm-hmm. So that whole thing, waiting for summer, waiting for you to come around, is could be summer's coming around, or summer, as you say, is coming around. And the April rain. So you've got us moving through the seasons.
Yeah. That's really nice. That's really clever.
It actually reminds me of there was this little indie rom com a few years back called 500 Days of Summer, where the girl's name was named Summer.
Okay.
It was their relationship over 500 days because it wasn't just one summer. It was it was 2.5 years, whatever that amounts to, or a year and a half, whatever. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a roller coaster relationship. It's kind of funny because you could actually waiting for summer. Because imagine if summer was the girl's name, waiting for summer.
Yeah, yeah. But you said the love walks out the door. So is it actually a breakup and the singer's hoping that when they meet in summer, it'll get back together?
This song, I don't think I had like a particular story or personal experience with. Oh. What inspired this song, I don't know, maybe you guys can relate, but I feel like when September comes around, there's just kind of like a wave of depression because
because
summer is over, you know, and just like you can't help it. You just kind of feel sad. Even if you're not in school anymore, you just know that like the leaves are going to start changing color and it's going to start getting cold, especially even if you live in Canada. Mm-hmm. And this song was kind of inspired by that feeling, but it could be about anything. It could be about a relationship. I guess for me, it was a little bit inspired by my family moving away because now I live in Toronto on my own, but originally like my mom, my sister and all of them, they lived here and they all moved to Calgary. And what happens every year is that usually I go to visit them in July. And so, like you miss them for a long time and you're waiting for the day that you get together.
It's weird, because for me, September is my New Year's. I always feel more.
I love the fall, but I'm one of the few.
That's when I'm thinking, like, okay, I'm going to get started. It's like new.
Genius. Sign up for a new course.
Yeah,
or something.
It is time to sort of get work done.
But if you're affected by the weather, and I have a friend who actually goes, the poor guy, he goes to Mexico for 2 months every winter, but he has seasonal affective disorder. Like, he really has clinical depression because it's winter and like the short days, lack of light. Yeah. I say, you know, just get one of those glow lights. It's cheaper than Mexico. He said, yeah, but Mexico is prettier.
I can't
argue with that. Yeah, so he goes to Puerto Vallarta for 2 months.
It's like people live in Vancouver, they get depressed because it rains for like 60 days.
True.
Long, right?
But this is interesting because I'm looking at it. If you take this song as you're in love with summer, the only word that would change that is your love walks out the door. Because you could have said, I guess that's how it goes when you walk out the door, and that's the season, because the rest all applies to a season.
Maybe your
right?
love is summer. I don't know.
Maybe your love is summer.
That's the interesting thing about this. Well, you started with the feeling about the season, and there is some stuff in there about your family and whatever, right? But as soon as you put in, things like when your love walks out the door and waiting for you to come around, it end up sounding like a love song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as soon as you get the I and the you in there,
nothing is quite the same without you. Yeah. Winter's just not the same without summer.
That's not to say it's good or bad, but it's interesting that you can start with that kind of general feeling, but then get a little
love
more.
Love is so broad. We love many things.
Well, exactly, right? So and the nice thing.
I love waffles.
Waffles are great.
With strawberries?
Peanut butter.
Peanut butter.
Hot waffles with peanut butter?
Really?
Peanut butter and Nutella.
Both?
And I make a waffle sandwich.
Both?
Oh my God. That's it.
Why aren't you heavier?
I don't know.
Because you eat celery the rest of the time, probably.
Give it 15 years. The interesting thing about that is that you can sort of spin the song into a realm where it becomes a little bit more about personal relationships, and anyone can kind of read their own.
But I think that's the great thing. That's when you've written a successful song.
That's when other people
can read themselves into your message.
Mm. Yeah,
because some people write stuff which is so specific to their situation, and then it's really just kind of a bit embarrassing.
One of the biggest compliments I ever got on my songwriting years ago. This friend listened to my album, my first and only album. He said, your songs give me a structure in which I can feel my feelings, right? It's the same idea, but he said, it's there for so I can feel something, right? And I guess that's our goal, kind of, to connect to someone. You're feeling something, they listen into it, and they feel something, but they're not feeling your you know, you're communicating your emotions in the sound, but really we go to what does that mean for us?
Yeah.
Right? So I challenge you, Amir, next time you're on the show, I want to hear the waffle song. Because okay. I think it's time for a funny song from you.
Oh, yeah?
Waffles with peanut butter and Nutella. You're just like you make it a love song dedicated to waffles and with that. And then play it up that there's a lot of things to love. That's a great line.
I might have to sell it to Nutella.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Actually, man, if you got that, that could be a good gig, man.
The song could be called There's a Lot of Things to Love. Mm. And then it leads with waffles.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I don't know. It's just an idea.
Sure.
That's true.
5%. I want 5%.
Now, how do people get more of your music?
If you go to my website, amirbrandon.com, all of my links are there. But usually my username is Amir Brandon on social media. So
A-M-I-R.
A-M-I-R.
Is it available for sale on iTunes, the album?
Yes. Well, so far I have a couple singles on iTunes, but I also have some stuff on Bandcamp if you find.
On Bandcamp?
If you want to look me up there. I have some of my older stuff is on there for free. I have like a collection of cover songs on there that you could download.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, Diamonds Rain will be on iTunes on August 11th.
Oh, we got the sneak preview here.
Yes, ooh, you did.
This is a fresh one. This is a fresh song.
It's a fresh song.
Ooh, oh, it's got that nice fresh song.
Fresh as diamonds.
And you're going to be playing at Free Times soon, you were saying.
That's correct.
Tell the folks about it.
Yeah, I'm going to be at Free Times Cafe on August 19th. I believe that it starts at 7:30.
But, check the listings.
Yeah, check the listings. Send me a message on Facebook or wherever, and I will hook you up, yo.
Yeah, it's a showcase of new artists. And, of course, Free Times is one of the premier music venues for people starting out in Toronto. It's been going over 35 years now.
Yeah, they recently had their 35-year thing. And it's
very supportive.
Yeah, nice. Monday night.
You're in the room in the back, I assume, right? The little room with the stage and everything.
Yeah, well, that's actually the best thing about Free Times. I mean, the hosts are really nice and everything, but they have that room in the back that's dedicated to music.
It's not
with the bar. It's
The owner has a facilitator there, like a host, who encourages everyone to listen and kind of, you know,
so it's
people
really
who
aren't a listening room.
Yes. Yeah. And open mics aren't always that way.
I think I hear the band, guys.
Oh, is the band playing?
Yes, I think it is.
Oh, the engineer just moved his finger around in the air. Is that the secret signal?
I think so. Because that's all the time we have today on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. We'd like to thank our guests, Amir Brandon. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Fantastic stuff. You got to come back to us.
I will.
Definitely. Okay.
Waffle song.
Send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the site at songtalk.ca. Please subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes at songtalk.ca/iTunes. And don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at the website as well. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned here on Song Talk Radio on the resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup on Wednesday, August 16th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Transat Club. Free to join on meetup.com, free to attend the meetup, and there's beer. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the details. We'd like to thank CJR 1280 AM for putting up with all our shenanigans and horseplay. We'd like to thank Vanessa Vreeland for manning the social media channels.
Woo!
Always amazing. She works so hard for us. And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the home listener, and thank Raphael, our man behind the buttons. He never gets any.
Raphael.
If you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
NeilMody_.com.
You can follow Bruce at
Bruce Harrett.
And
Amir Brandon.
At Amir Brandon.
At Amir Brandon, right. And of course, the lovely and talented Vanessa, you can at
Sunny_Vanessa.
Okay.
And Raphael's not on social media.
No, you can't follow him.
Don't follow him. It makes him nervous.
Yes. Right.
So, and please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out if you can be a guest on this very show. That's all we have tonight. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Keep on writing.
Good night.
Bye.